Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section below on my Q&A videos or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. One thing I wanted to mention is for my patrons, for those who are joined up on my Patreon campaign, who ask me questions, if you fire questions at me, those go to the top of the list. So today's episode, the first question is from one of my patrons. And anyway, just thought I'd let y'all know that that's a good way to get your question answered. So, because I got a lot of them. I get so many questions, it's hard for me to keep up. So without further ado, we're going to get right to it. George B. I don't understand why Scientology needs slave labor in its priesthood, the Sea Org. This is a very wealthy church that could easily afford to pay their clergy well, give them first-class accommodations, food, education, etc., correct? If we compare Scientology to the Catholic Church, who has a live-in clergy, which treats its priests, bishops, and cardinals well, then why can't Miscavige do the same? Even the Salvation Army provides good housing, pay, retirement, and health benefits for its officer corps. I don't understand why the concept of respecting one's own management structure is such a foreign concept here. How can Miscavige expect top performance of individuals who have no real incentive to do so? If the pay and benefits were good, perhaps they could recruit top individuals voluntarily. Perhaps if they were to pay a good percentage commission on services sold, then sales would rise. People are much more effective when they want to be and when they enjoy their job and life's position. If the Church of Scientology was anything except what it really is, then your question would actually make sense in the context that you're asking it, because then the church would actually be comparable to, say, the Catholic Church or a corporation that was trying to do well and keep its thing going and expanding and be successful into a far distant future. And and reward its members and its employees. However, the thing you have to keep in context with Scientology is that it's neither of these things. The Church of Scientology is not a church. I mean, it is a church. They call themselves a church, so they might as well be a church as far as that goes. But it's a destructive cult, and this is actually a really important point, because the facade that the Church of Scientology paints for itself to the world is a false facade. It's not what Scientology really is. And I've made this point before. I'll keep making it because it needs to be made over and over and again, is that it is a destructive cult with the only reason for its existence being to make money for its leader. That's it. That's the only reason Scientology is around. It's not there to help people out and get people to higher states of awareness and potential and help them lead healthy, happy lives. And all of that is the shore story of Scientology. That's the thing they tell people. That's the window dressing. It's not what it really is. And the reason I can sit here and say that, despite the fact that there are thousands of people in it, there have been, probably tens of thousands, maybe even a couple hundred thousand people who've taken part in it and who will say that it was a self-help activity and that it was something that was put together in order to help people out and get them to higher states of awareness and all that. The reason I could ignore all of that is because of exactly this question, is because look at how they treat their people when you get down to it, when you really get down to the core of what Scientology actually does, not what it says, not how they want you to think they act, but what they really do, and specifically they being David Miscavige, who is Scientology. Ask anybody who's in Scientology. Who is the epitome of Scientology? What is the penultimate example of Scientology? It is David Miscavige. So how does he act? What does he do? How does he reward his juniors? How does he see to it that the C organization, the clergy of Scientology, How does he see to it that they move up the bridge to total freedom and make it to OT? The answer to all of these questions is he could care less. He does not care about anybody except himself. And the proof of that is, look at the C organization. Look at how hard it is for C organization members to struggle to even get on study or any benefit of Scientology at all. Look at the staff of Scientology. They are not treated well. They are abused. They are treated like slaves. They are paid like slaves. They make nothing. And they get into a mindset where they think that this is some noble sacrifice on their part. And it's not. The only sacrifice they're making is their own lives, because they're being taken advantage of by David Miscavige. They were being taken advantage of by L. Ron Hubbard. Now they're being taken advantage of by David Miscavige for the last 30-something years. So, you know, the last three generations of Scientologists have been under Miscavige. So we might as well just talk about David Miscavige at this point, because, you know, L. Ron Hubbard is pretty old news. And that is the true picture of Scientology, is one where people are being lied to, deceived from the word go about what it is that they're part of, and they are made to pay and pay and pay and pay for the privilege of calling themselves a Scientologist, which is no privilege at all, because in the end it doesn't mean anything. So that's you know, my best answer to this question is he's not doing those things because that's not what he's even trying to do. David Miscavige doesn't care about the future of Scientology. He doesn't care about its expansion, and he certainly doesn't care about the welfare of the people who work for him. As far as he's concerned, there are a dime a dozen. When he gets rid of one, somebody else will step up. Somebody else can be pulled up from the lower ranks, and they don't know what they're getting into. When they come to where Miscavige works at the international base in Hemet, California, they don't know what life is like there, because they haven't been there. They've been in Los Angeles or Clearwater, or wherever they're coming from. And they have this idea of what it's going to be like at the INT base. And they're in for a rude awakening when they get there. And then they get that rude awakening and they go, oh my God, it must be me, you know, because it can't be Miscavige, right? And, you know, until they eventually smart up and realize that, oh my God, this is not at all what I thought it was. But by then it's too late for them, for the most part, because they're stuck in that situation. So then he'll just pull up another person, some poor ignorant boob from somewhere else, and he uses them up. And that's what Scientology does. It actually does that at all levels, not just at the INT base. It just uses people until they're no longer willing to be used, and then it spits them out. So that's his business model, and that's the best answer I've got for you. Oso Buko. Dear Chris, I've heard that in Russia, members of the Church of Scientology have been attacked physically by some students, which proves that Russian people are extremely intelligent. Do you have knowledge of any other facts like this? Do you think that in the future we will have the hope to see Scientologists fear for their own physical integrity? I'm taking up this question because I actually wanted to make a point about the context of the question, which I feel is more important than the question itself. I don't wish any Scientologist to experience physical torment, punishment, or abuse in the name of justice or in the name of getting back at them or anything like that. I don't actually wish any Scientologists ill will as far as that goes, as far as wanting to beat on them or torture them or anything like that. And I don't think that any violence against Scientologists is justified for any reason short of pure self-defense. I mean, if you know somebody's attacking you, fine, but as far as going out and beating on Scientologists or attacking them, that is absolutely unacceptable. And not something I would ever, ever endorse or ask anybody to do. Nor do I think it's particularly acceptable to fair game Scientologists or try to get them fired from their jobs or try to ruin their lives or out them in some way or try to feed the same tactics back at them. I don't think that that's the way to change anybody's hearts or minds, and I don't think it's the way to a safer, more tolerant world, and I don't think it's how Scientology is going to go down. That's not how to do that. If you want to get people out of Scientology, or you want to make a statement about Scientology, be kind, be understanding, be loving, be compassionate. That is what gets through the hatred and the venom and the vile that Scientologists spew. It's feeding it right back at them only hardens their resolve and makes them feel even more righteous about what they're doing. And that's not just with Scientologists, that's with any religious group, with any political group, with any social group, with human beings. That's how we are. You know, when we encounter resistance and are put in a situation where we become martyrs for a cause, man, there is nothing better for a cause than to have some martyrs. So please, to anybody who ever watches anything I ever say or agrees with what I'm saying, please hear me on this. Do not engage in any kind of physical attacks or violence against Scientologists or against anybody for that matter. I can't really be more clear about this. So please. And as far as a future where Scientologists have to fear for their physical safety, I certainly hope no such future ever comes about. I don't think that anybody should have to walk around in the world in fear of their safety because of their beliefs. I do believe, I will say for sure, that Scientologists should receive justice for when they have carried out criminal activities. That justice should be served up in a court of law and with due process. That's what I believe Scientologists who have committed crimes and have committed human rights violations and various other, you know, acts of illegality, I think those people should be punished by the law to the full extent of the law. And I don't think any kind of vigilante justice is called for, nor would it be constructive. Kazuka. Thank you, Chris, for delivering so much important information on such a consistent basis. I'm a regular watcher slash listener of yours and many other Scientology busting YouTubers, and have read dozens of books on the subject, primarily those written by former members. Yet, after seeing a clip of John Travolta claiming that joy is the operative concept in Scientology, I am left baffled. I can't recall any other instance of this particular technology being discussed either by Scientology propaganda or former members. I must have missed something. Can you fill us in on this aspect of Scientology teaching? I can tell you exactly why it is that John Travolta is talking about this. It comes from a poem that L. Ron Hubbard wrote, which I think was later turned into a song. The poem is called The Joy of Creating, and he put this into a bulletin. And Scientologists really, really eat this up. This is a very, very important thing in Scientology. But it's kind of funny. It's not really talked about very much. And this probably is the first time you're ever hearing about this. If I recall correctly, the poem goes, "Force yourself to smile and you'll soon stop frowning. Force yourself to laugh and you'll soon find something to laugh about. Wax enthusiastic and you'll very soon feel so. A being causes his own feelings. The greatest joy there is in life is creating. Splurge on it." So I think I got that right. So I obviously still remember that. That was something that we, I mean, in a way had pounded into us while I was in Scientology. Because the joy of creating and the whole idea of a being causes his own feelings is kind of parallel to this other concept I've spoken about before, which is the whole idea in Scientology that you are responsible for your own condition. It's sort of a positive, upbeat interpretation of that. There's lots of downbeat interpretations of it in Scientology where, you know, you are to blame for everything bad that ever happened to you because you're responsible. But on the opposite side, and the side that Scientologists tend to want to look at and be positive about, is this business of forcing themselves to smile, and they'll soon stop frowning, and you know, ha ha ha. And if you can just sort of force yourself into it, then you can snap out of a funk you're in, or you can be having a bad day, and you can sort of remember this poem, and it's sort of inspirational, and then you are maybe having a better day because you're sort of forcing yourself to. There is a lot of psychological damage that can come from suppressing or willfully repressing your emotions, and I've written about that because it's not a good thing to be doing over a long period of time. But I do think that to this day, I'm not somebody who's going to be espousing Hubbard, but I think the idea of kind of picking yourself up by the bootstraps and maybe turning a bad day into a good day, or it's kind of along the same lines as turn that frown upside down, sort of thinking. Sometimes it works, and sometimes it's helpful to your day to do that. And that's what this poem is, The Joy of Creating. That's how Scientologists use it. And they really love it, and they really love this whole idea of being joyful and creating things and stuff like that. So that's why John Travolta said that. Anon 8109. It is interesting that you choose to believe in something, an afterlife, because you hope that it is true. Do you think that this is a general principle, that people should believe in things that they hope are true? I don't think you do. So if you don't think that such a general principle is a good one, then why is it good to believe in an afterlife based on this principle, but not have the principle apply to other beliefs? What makes belief in an afterlife special? Well, when it comes to metaphysical beliefs or supernatural beliefs or religious beliefs, they're all a hope. I mean, they're not knowledge. I think I've made it clear from my own viewpoint, at least, that knowing something and believing something are two different things. And I classify belief as a hope. It's not a knowledge. You don't know, for example, that God exists. You can hope he exists. I think hope is a synonym for belief. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with believing or hoping that something is a certain way if you don't have any valid evidence or proof otherwise. And that's a key part of this. If somebody has verifiable, falsifiable evidence of the validity of something, right? Like the earth is round. Well, you can hope the earth is flat, but that runs smack into the face of actual evidence that it's not. It's undeniable that the earth is round. It is a sphere. People have orbited it. We know this. This has been known for centuries. And I'm just choosing a really obvious, stupid example to make the point. It's not like flat earthers need a lot of debating, but on this particular point, it serves the purpose of showing the difference between a valid evidence, an evidentiary fact, that you can go, it's a fact. The earth is not flat. It is round. No one, not one person in this world, can say, here is the evidence that God does not exist. There's not one person in the world who can say, here is the evidence that there is no afterlife, that we are not spiritual beings. That evidence does not exist. Not right now, it doesn't. There is nothing but conjecture, one way or the other. And you don't have to believe in an afterlife if you don't want to. You don't have to have a hope for an afterlife. It's a belief. Beliefs are a choice. You choose to believe things. And I know that little kids and that sort of thing don't necessarily have a choice in it, and I understand that. That's not the point I'm making right now. I'm talking about belief in general. People grow up, they can change their beliefs. You don't get to choose your facts. Facts are facts, right? The earth is round. You do get to choose your beliefs, and you do get to change your beliefs if you want to. And when those beliefs have to do with something that no fact or evidence can refute, what's the problem? What's the harm in that? Why is that an issue? I don't think it really should be, to really get down to brass tacks on it. And so that's why I said, in terms of my own beliefs, I'm a work in progress. I am totally not decided really on much of anything as far as how I believe, what I believe. I'm not any kind of you know, believer of any certain organized religion or anything like that. Obviously, kind of have a little bit of a chip on my shoulder about organized religion for obvious reasons. And maybe at some point I'll get over that. Maybe I won't. I don't know. But I leave the door open to having spiritual beliefs because I truly hope that there is more to life than all of this. And if I'm wrong, well, no harm, no foul. And if I'm right, hey, great, you know. So I don't really think it's my place one way or the other to tell people that their beliefs are true or false because I don't know and neither does anybody else. So really kind of why make a big issue out of it? Whoa. And with that, it's time for Flash Answers. Matt Lilly. Wish I was there as I wanted to ask if it's true that Scientologists can't use modern technology. For instance, I heard they still use an older form of fax. I think it's called a telex machine or something. Anyway, thanks for uploading. Just sub to you. Would love to see you here in Australia one day, but fortunately Scientology really isn't that much of a deal here. Yeah, back in the day, Scientology did use old technology, which at the time was state-of-the-art, and telexes were one of those pieces of technology. And because it's written in policy that way, then they continue to call them telexes. But they're not. They don't use telexes anymore, really. They just use email, and they format it like telexes, because that's what Hubbard said to do. A lot of Scientology is antiquated. They still use file folders rather than just switching everything over to digital. You know, they have some digital file format stuff, but they still keep all these folders of all this information, which they could easily convert into a digital format if they really just put the money and effort into it. So all of that is because Dianetics and Scientology comes out of the 1950s and 60s and 70s, before the digital age and before the digital revolution and the information age. So, you know, really got going. So that's why they still hold on to and embrace these archaic concepts. Jennifer Isaacs, what does Scientology think of conspiracies, really? Are there some Scientologists that believe in things like the New World Order, reptiles, and Illuminati? Just curious, thanks. There are Scientologists who very definitely believe in the New World Order and the Illuminati and 12 guys who run the world, and they believe those things because L. Ron Hubbard told them to. L. Ron Hubbard said that that's how the world is organized, and he said the psychs, the psychiatrists, are the strong arm of this 12-man operation that runs the world. And he said all that in a lecture in 1967, and in follow-up, he wrote extensively about it, and he called it the New World Order and Smersh and all kinds of goofy labels. And he was a total conspiracy theorist. And that's why a lot of Scientologists are too. Cheryl Berry. Hi, Chris. In Going Clear, Jason Begay comes across with a full and sincere array of emotions regarding his time in the cult. One thing he alludes to is going exterior, which seems to have had quite the impact on him, regardless of how the rest of his experience had left him sad, confused, disillusioned, and even angry. Do you know of anybody else who ever experienced the phenomenon of going exterior? Just curious whether this is just another gain that is too easily melded into their minds. In Scientology, one of the primary goals of auditing is to go exterior, because in Scientology they believe that people are immortal spiritual beings and not their bodies. And they fully expect at any time in auditing to pop out of their head and be able to see the world around them, but not from these eyes, but from an exterior point of view. That's called going exterior, and almost all Scientologists claim to either have had that happen to them or really want that to happen to them as part of their experience in Scientology. Blue Dance Lily. I have a background in psychology, I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and work with clients in the field of mental health crisis. As I've studied the practices of auditing and Hubbard's assertion that Dianetics is a true and accurate description of how the mind works, I've been astounded at how grossly wrong he was. He clearly had no education in the scope of psychology. Why do you think Scientology has gotten the traction it has when it is so antithetical to known science? Why aren't psychologists speaking out about this? Well, the truth is psychologists spoke out about it back in 1950 when Dianetics was published, and they lambasted it. They trashed it. I mean, psychology has been down on Dianetics and Scientology since it started. And it's not the big, huge conspiracy theory that Hubbard pretended it was, where the APA and the AMA are out to get Scientology or something. they just looked at it as quack science right from the word go, and they were absolutely right. Because it's, you know, it's just a meshing of Freudian psychology and Jungian psychology and hypnotism and everything else that Hubbard could throw into the mix. So that's what science, that's what, you know, Dianetics and Scientology are based on. Why do people accept this? For the same reasons that they accept homeopathy and Dr. Oz's latest miracle cures and diet plans. Because some people will believe anything. And, you know, I don't get to get on a high horse about that because for 27 years, I was one of those people. So, you know, people fall for this stuff because they want to. And they want something to believe in, and they want something to make their lives better. And Scientology promises that, and they believe it. After arts. Chris, you're an extraordinarily engaging and gifted communicator. Even in your earliest videos, where the production values weren't so great, you displayed an earnestness and charisma that demanded our attention. I wonder if and how your work in the Church of Scientology helped you develop your powerful skills for speaking and presentation. It would be ironic if the Church of Scientology, for their own purposes, directly trained you in the superlative communication skills you now use to educate the public against them. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And I only read all of that to give the question context because, yeah, Scientology did train me in how to communicate. I did get lots of public speaking opportunities while I was in Scientology. And I do have a talent for it or whatever. I learned a lot about communication, and communication was a very, very important subject to me in Scientology. And I think that people who go into Scientology with a gift for that or a talent for that or an inclination or proclivity to it will be benefited by what Scientology has to offer as far as that goes, because it gives you opportunities and there's drills and things you do, the TRs and all that stuff. And, you know, people talk about how there's, hypnotism with TRs and all that, and that's true too. Anything can be taken to an extreme that it shouldn't be taken to, and that very definitely includes those training routines. They did train me in it, and it did help, and now I do my best to use my communication skills to show other people how bad Scientology actually is. Navik Darkroom, how would you react if David Miscavige cloned himself? I think I would react the same way that I will react if Donald Trump becomes president of the United States. I will run screaming from the country and move to Canada. G. Fox, I recently went to the Church of Scientology site out of curiosity, and one thing that struck me was all of the new churches being opened. I don't understand why Miscavige would be opening so many churches when there, as you and many others have shown, are a dwindling number of bodies to fill them. What is your take on this? Well, I've talked about this pretty extensively in other videos, so I'm not going to rehash everything I've already said. You can check out my original series on what is wrong with Scientology, and I definitely talk about the whole ideal org strategy and what's wrong with that there. But in a couple words to answer this question real fast, real estate value. It's an asset. Those buildings are assets for the Church of Scientology's net worth. Enough said. And so we come to the end of another critical Q&A episode. I hope you guys are getting a lot of value out of the answers that I'm providing here in this, and I really am just loving the hell out of doing these shows. So do keep your questions coming, and you can, like I said, email them to me or leave them in the comments section below. There's a lot happening in the world of Scientology right now, and it's a very exciting time for me and other people to be a critic of Scientology and to speak out against it, because it is really having a not very fun time in the courts and in the court of public opinion. And this is only going to get worse as time goes on with this. By the way, I am on the last chapter of my book, so that is rolling along quite well, and I expect to have that done very, very soon, and I will definitely let everybody on this channel know all about that. And my patrons will be getting a copy of the book for free. I will be sending them a link so that they can download the ebook for free. So if you're getting value out of what I'm doing, consider supporting me and throwing some love my way, either by becoming a patron on my Patreon account or, you know, some other fashion. So anyway, thank you very much for watching. I really appreciate you guys coming around, and I'll see you next week.